Merħba l-edizzjoni oħra fil-fatlaħħar edizzjoni tal-programm Il-Riċerka fl-Università miegħi Colin Fitz hawnhekk fuq Campus FM u llum ħan ikkonkludu b'intervista ma' Dr. Sebastiano D'Amico u Dr. Daniela Farrugia mill-Dipartiment tal-Geoscienza fiħdan il-Fakultà ta' Xjenza. Ħan nitkellmu dwar terremoti, l-istudju ta' terremoti, il-modi kif jiġu studjati terremoti u l-applikazzjonijiet għal bosta oqsma oħrajn ta' kuljum nistgħu ngħidu. Imma biex nisiru nafu aktar, sa naqleb l-Ingliż għaliex Dr. D'Amico huwa Taljan, huwa fil-fatt il-kap tad-dipartiment. Dr. D'Amico, you are the head of the department, yes?
Yes, I'm currently heading the Department of Geosciences, which is a relatively new department, actually. Has been set it up a few years ago, and we carried out several type of research and kind of research applied mainly to the planet, so both in terms of the atmospheric oceanography and the part where myself, Daniela, and some other guests that you had are involved to, like, this is like the solid earth. And
yes, indeed. And in fact, a few weeks ago I had as guests Matthew and Pauline.
Correct.
From your department, who told us about research into identifying pockets of water, drinkable water underground, using the techniques that your department and scientists such as yourself use to study earthquakes.
Yes, exactly. Both Pauline and Matthew, they work with us. We just form basically part of the same research group within the mm-hmm. department. And yes, indeed. We do have this new branch, let's say, of cutting-edge research in which we use traditional seismology techniques that usually are used for earthquakes and stuff that Matthew is applying mainly to look at groundwater and mm-hmm. to actually derive and some information and get out some knowledge on how to apply those techniques for
indeed,
these kind of resources.
And the program is available on the website, on the Campus FM website, as part of our previous programs in our archives for streaming or even downloading. So it's one of the 13 programs that make up this series about research here at the University of Malta. But also in the studio is Dr. Daniela Farrugia.
Hello
Dr. Daniela.
And hello, Colin.
Could you tell us a little bit about your position within this group?
So I'm currently working as a researcher within the group. At the moment, my research involves, and my daily job involves doing the monitoring, the seismic monitoring. So every day, any activity, earthquake activity that there is, I analyze it, I relocate the earthquakes. But I also am involved in research when it comes to the site effects. What are site effects? So basically, this was mainly my PhD study. So a lot of people like think that when there is an earthquake, the only effectors which affect how what happens to buildings, they are just how strong the earthquake was, which we call the magnitude, and the distance. But those are not the only two factors which affect what happens to the building. An important factor which has been quite studied in the past 30-40 years is the site effect. So it depends on where your building is built, basically. To get a very simple example, if you don't build buildings on sand, you will build your building on rocks. But funnily enough, we have buildings which are built on areas which are geologically dangerous, meaning they are soft, and so when there's an earthquake, the earthquake waves are amplified even more there when on this kind of geological layers.
I see.
Now, in Malta, these studies were not conducted in a scientific manner before, and rather than not in a scientific manner, we did not have data on what can happen to buildings in case of a big earthquake in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And which areas am I talking about? These are the areas in the northern part of the islands and in Gozo where we have a layer of clay.
As part of our geological structure.
Now, what is interesting in Malta is that this layer of clay is not found outcropping, so at the top.
Uh-huh.
It's found underneath a layer of rock. It's the upper coralline limestone.
So at first, the people who actually built there didn't know there was clay far beneath. Or not so far beneath.
We know from the geological map, but we still build a lot of buildings in these areas.
I see, so we've been lucky so far.
What
about those famous clay slopes, or what are called clay slopes, in the Ain Tufiha area, in Jnaina area? Is that what we're talking about? Is that the clay coming to the surface? Or is that really an
exposed area. Mm-hmm. So we have an exposed area where we can see a cross-section of the Maltese geology. So we can see the upper coralline limestone at the top.
Uh-huh.
And then the blue clay beneath. Uh-huh. Obviously, when even Sebastiano can talk about this even further. Even, for example, near Popeye Village. You can see this very clear. You can see the...
It looks like a sandwich. We refer to it as a sandwich.
Obviously, there you have more coastal erosion happening, so the effect is even... enhanced. But that kind of geology is found in basically like most of the northern areas. So what we had to do is I wanted to see what effect there is of that sand, that clay, which is buried, but what it can do to our buildings.
Of course.
So that is something we are very interested in.
Now, Sebastiano, Daniela just mentioned you that you can elaborate on a particular point.
Right.
So could you do that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I just add on what Daniela actually said. Basically, what we are studying and what we are looking at is from a physical point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is that this layer of clay that Daniela was actually mentioning before, and she's studying quite deeply, might trap the seismic waves inside. And therefore, being that different materials and they react to this, to the travel and the progression of the waves, we need this geology, then can create what Daniela rightly so called amplifications function. So the wave, being like on a magnitude of a certain scale, can even be doubled on that scale, so the shaking will be harder. Basically what Daniela is investigating through her studies, and she has been very successful as well in finding out some quantitative measure, because what she said at the beginning is very true, that we need to quantify in order to apply this. That's why we are an applied department and why we try to have this in a scientific manner and in a quantitative way, not just descriptive. That's what distinguishes eventually our kind of research, we try to contribute then to the country, to society at the end.
And how do you go about doing this research? And does this mean you have better equipment nowadays, more modern equipment that allows you to do the study properly?
So first of all, when I started my PhD, which was back in 2013, ideally, to quantify it, you should have stations on different locations.
Uh-huh.
So seismic stations recording constantly at different locations. Ideally, one at the site that you want to investigate.
Uh-huh.
So let's say if I want to investigate Malliha, I put a station on Melliha and a close rock site. So you do a simple comparison. So, just by looking at two recordings, you can see the difference.
And just to interrupt you for a second, we're talking about these little earthquakes that sometimes don't even get reported, but they're constantly happening, right?
Yes, you don't need big earthquakes to see the difference. So,
and actually, the idea is it's exactly this. Not to wait for the big one, but to get ready for it. And so using the small earthquakes or eventually some other sources that Daniela now will explain, what we call ambient noise, and Daniela will elaborate on this eventually, to actually understanding those processes and why not, on the long run, and hopefully, fingers crossed, get ready if a big one strikes. So that's the idea.
Of course.
So just to get ready, make a kind of a preliminary screening. And yes, indeed, we do have now a good set of equipments, because what actually makes the difference at the end of the day to quantify, you need to have the right instruments. It's not enough the good willing of doing something, but you need to have the tools to actually do that.
So do you need the investment for
that? And we need the investment. Likely enough, we have been involved in several projects funded by the EU, even some internal projects and stuff. So we had built this laboratory almost from scratch in the last decades or so.
I would say.
And,
but I think it's very important, because considering the amount of construction that has doubled and tripled in the last 20 years in this country.
Right, exactly.
We're building in a different way than we used to build before.
Right. The population density has increased.
Exactly. So your kind of studies are massively important more than ever.
Yes, I don't know if more than ever we can say that, but they are important indeed.
They do and contribute to the society, I believe. So I think that is one of the reasons I love doing what I do, because I do believe that our research doesn't stay behind, you know, in a closed room, but we do have a lot to contribute to the society.
And if I can joke here, just a bit, the reason why she loves it, because our lab is outside. We need to go outside.
Fantastic.
But we don't stay just in the lab crunching data. We need to actually to collect, be on that particular site to be investigated and to actually do that. But joking apart, yes, it's a nice piece of job that we're doing.
So, Daniela, you were describing how you go about doing the work, the research.
As I told you, ideally you have stations recording, and obviously earthquakes happening, so that you have data. In Malta, up till 7 years ago, we only had one instrument, that in our Dalam, with Dalam. So when I started my PhD, this was not possible. And obviously it takes time to get a lot of data to analyze it. So what we did way back, we designed the project in two parts. So as even Sebastiano was saying, you can use instruments which are placed at the surface. So you do not dig any holes, they are not destructible, non-destructible techniques, and non-invasive. So what you do is you set the instruments at the on the surface, on the ground, and with recording just ambient noise. So, like the noise which exists in the earth from daily activities by human beings, or even the natural sources like the waves in the sea, trees moving, cars, also cars passing by, those are anthropogenic.
Underground water.
So, and all the sources that are creating noise.
Yes.
Noise is a word which is
in a radio. Noise is something that you don't want, but we need
we don't want, but we really used it. And what you do with these instruments, they record the noise, and then you can get a profile of what is underneath. I like to compare it to an ultrasound. So it's the same idea. So you have instruments at the surface, and you can get a picture, a photo of what is beneath.
Using sound.
So then we got that took the most time, because you have to, we chose a lot of sites, went to around 30 sites in Malta, mm-hmm. In the northern areas, and we got these profiles, these what we call shear wave velocity profiles, and these are important because then from this shear wave velocity profile you could, on a computer, you could like input an earthquake, mm-hmm. and from the profile you can tell what is going to happen at the top.
Of course, using a computer model.
Using mm-hmm. a computer model.
Yes.
So that was my PhD study was about that. Then, after finishing my PhD, we got the opportunity to install a lot of instruments. I mean, a lot. But for Malta, it's quite a lot. Yes, we are a very dense network station. Mm-hmm. Network. We have around 8 instruments in Malta recording all the time.
And we're talking about seismographs.
What actually was in, let's say, discussed last time.
Yes,
last
yes,
program,
yes,
right?
Of course.
So exactly, those are permanently there. Mm-hmm. And
so with seismographs, then I had 3 years of data. Mm-hmm. From 3 different locations in Ala, mm-hmm. which is also on, there's clay there, Maliha and Comino. Mm-hmm. And from the 3 years of earthquake data, we are now getting the first, like, real, using real earthquake data, this comparison between rock, uh-huh. and clay, and also confirming what was previously done in the PhD.
That's fantastic. And this kind of research and these results, they not only build up more information and knowledge about the geology, earthquake risk, but also they can be used in terms of cultural heritage.
Yes. Sebastiano can elaborate on that.
Yes, indeed. They can be used in several things. Now, you explored already what Matthew does, right?
Yes,
so
on the
that
show
she
last time.
Is like non-conventional things to look at something that it's on a different, let's say, scientific domain almost, mm-hmm. right? Water. And indeed, we can use this to cultural heritage. The beauty, mm-hmm, at mm-hmm. least, of this kind of equipment is that we can do things non-invasively, so it's perfect for cultural heritage. And we use just not seismic, but also different other sources, mm-hmm. and different kind of techniques. And basically the idea is, as Daniela said, looking at some surfaces, whatever the orientation of those surfaces are, like either vertical or could be walls or could be anything, and we look behind those. So basically we see the unseen.
Uh-huh.
And we can help in interpreting those data by then the historians or the conservator of a particular site, uh-huh. and actually reconstruct what lies underneath.
Oh.
And to give an example, we have been involved in several projects, both locally and internationally, to investigate archaeological site or cultural heritage. Locally, the one that we are quite proud of and a nice piece of work that we have done is the St. John Co-Cathedral.
Yes.
So a few years ago, we have been collaborating to the people and the curator, Miss Cinzia De Giorgio, Adriana Alessio, like being the curators of the site, and actually scan the entire cathedral and even some other parts in order to have a complete mapping of the burial site underneath that beautiful floor there is there,
oh, wow.
without touching it, just
yes?
passing with our instrument all around. So in a few nights we walked for about 20 kilometers up and down the church, but it was quite nice. And so that's good.
So you built up a virtual map of what's underneath.
Basically, we built a virtual map of what's underneath, where there is location, and this has to be also looked in terms of something that usually, okay, you look at historical fonts, but how precise are those? Mm. So our help will be in being more precise and helping them in interpreting or reinterpreting, if need be, the historical sources.
Of course.
We are quite involved also with the Heritage Malta, And we've been investigating and helping them in investigating few sites as well for several needs that they have, either for restarting a restoration or like locating few potential what we call anomalies, but for them eventually could mean any something. Mm-hmm. And so basically that's what we have done. For example, we have a project, small project going on in southern Sicily, so just across the sea.
Yes.
Not far away though, even if it's abroad.
Mm-hmm.
But in which we are looking and helping the archaeologists to looking for an ancient port, a Greek ancient port, that actually is missing. There is the city, but nobody knows where the port is. Mm-hmm. And the city must have a port at uh-huh. that time, and is missing. So it should be buried maybe somewhere, and we're looking for it.
Oh,
so that's that sort of things that that we do. And also the things that we do and we have fun with is to apply those techniques at different scales. So whatever, now we're talking about large sites.
Mm.
So either buildings or large areas like Daniela was talking or the mentioning Antofia, Popeye Village, those are quite large, or an archaeological site could be large. But also we can apply some of those techniques with the few tunings here and there, but also at small scale artifacts, even the scale of a statue.
Oh, goodness.
When we talk
about
like
cultural underground.
That is buried underground, or uh-huh. even actually a statue that you have like in a church, in a
yes.
museum or something, and you need to investigate just to know more about the construction typology, if there are any damage inside, any cracks.
Oh, what it's made of. Oh,
or what
okay.
it's made of. And even if there are cracks that I mentioned
yes.
are not visible at the surface. Or,
oh.
And this can be applied at
in a very, very small
scale. Very, very small scale. And we make also use of digital techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And those digital techniques help to reconstruct 3D computer models that then can be used to several kind of applications.
This is really
and,
interesting.
Yes, and it's nice. And
yes.
we fly like even drones.
Yes.
In order, like, especially to cover large areas, and each of them is equipped with different kind of instrument sensors, so with different targets. So within our domain, we are kind of multidisciplinary. So
yes.
again, we are not talking just about one technique, seismic or georadar, electrical tomography, or uh-huh. anything like this, but the combination of those.
Yes.
It's like Daniela was saying, like going to the medical doctor, right? If you need to depend the investigation on a particular matter, the medical doctor will ask you to actually perform different kind of tests and different
yes.
kind of routines or different kind of analysis or whatever, right? That's exactly what we do, but
yeah.
on a different scale and with different techniques.
Indeed. And Daniela, when you concluded your PhD and the work you continue mm-hmm. to do, you did say that it's, I don't want to sensationalize, but it's all about identifying risk.
Yeah.
Including, you mentioned the words that nobody wants to hear, the big one, if there's ever a,
yeah.
God forbid, big earthquake. But did you come up with any data that is worrying?
Rather than data which is worrying, I mean, yes, what we can say is that there is a difference
mm-hmm.
between areas in Malta which are located on rock
mm-hmm.
and areas which are situated with you have clay underneath
yes.
the buildings.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to buildings, especially important ones, one has to be very careful when building in clay areas,
uh-huh.
clay areas.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And certain studies have to be done, which are being done ultimately.
But to be blunt, if ever, God forbid, a bigger earthquake
mind
does
you, we
happen.
Mind you, we had big earthquakes,
yes,
so if we look at
Indina
back
was
history,
damaged,
that's,
yes.
and Indina is located on an
oh,
area
okay.
which
so
has 30 meters of clay and just around 6 meters of broken, like a fractured upper coralline limestone.
So it's already been proven by history. If it does strike, I mean, the chances are that towards the north of Malta, the damage will be bigger than perhaps further south.
If there is a big earthquake, most probably yes. In a lot of areas there will be damage.
Yes. Like also, you need to also to consider, if I may, and combine, it's not just the geology, what we're actually looking at is to parameterize the geology to see what input they will have, the geology will have, mm-hmm. into the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So the key and crucial factor is how buildings are constructed.
Exactly, that's now, very important.
And especially the kind of buildings. Because small buildings, they can be constructed in a certain manner. There are regulations in place, and they are continuously updated, I believe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then depends even on the kind of building, because if it's a strategic building, could be an hospital, a school, mm-hmm. and stuff, mm-hmm. maybe they will need to have different standards, and then those things that to take be can taken into account. But obviously, this takes time. Mm-hmm. In order to be implemented and stuff. Our is our first step towards mm-hmm. it, right?
Yes.
And then, but the actual practice where all those things are in practice,
mm-hmm.
are already in practice, and is even to build earthquake-ready scenarios. What mm-hmm. do I mean by this? So Daniela's results coupled with some other knowledge that we do have of the Maltese islands, what's happening around us as well, helps to build scenarios, and civil protection can exercise on it. So get ready if anything happens, because even if the building stock is not the one that ideally we would like to mm-hmm. have, nowhere in the world is the ideal case scenario, right? We mm-hmm. always have something that is not correctly in place, but at least the emergency responders will have
yes.
the tools to actually yes. get ready to that.
We work a lot with
just like you did recently, we're talking 2021, 22, in the preparation for tsunami.
Exactly.
Yes.
Correct.
Tsunami
exactly.
drills
exactly.
with your department.
Exactly.
Can I just, because we're coming to the end of the program, can I have 1 minute from both of you about your background, your educational background? Let's start with Daniela.
Actually, so I studied math and physics
mm-hmm.
At A level, then I chose to study math and physics, the BSc in mathematics and physics. When I was going to do the project for my final year, I immediately fell in love with the idea of, I love doing applied things. I love theoretical, but maths, I love it, I really love it. But when it came to physics, I really liked this, the branch of geophysics.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked, because it's dynamic, so Sebastiano was joking about, but it's true. You go to the field, you get data, you analyze it, so it's very, very dynamic.
What courses did you follow here at university?
The BSc in Maths and Physics.
I started
my PhD after mm-hmm. the degree.
Mm-hmm.
Many people think we come from a geography background, but we are more on, even Sebastiano,
yes.
We are both physicists.
Maths and Physics.
Let's hear your journey,
yes.
Sebastiano.
I wanted to be a medical doctor.
Okay, yeah.
But then, my path deviated a bit.
Uh-huh.
And Daniela, I started in doing physics. Basically, I did my undergrad, master, and PhD in physics and PhD uh-huh. in geophysics. Why I did physics and why I chose physics to start with is just because I was curious about several mechanisms. And I've been told, and actually it happens to be quite true, that if you have a problem, then you can solve it. But you need to have the tools. And and that's how I started.
Yes.
And then it's fun.
And how did you end up in Malta?
That's a nice story as well. But just by chance, I was coming. At the time, I was working in US. I mm-hmm. spent about 4 years there, and I wanted to find a place close home.
Mm.
I'm originally from Sicily.
Okay,
so Malta's perfect.
Of course,
I'm far enough, but close enough
yes.
as well. And so, about 12 years ago, then I landed on this island. which I call it home now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it's been a pleasure getting to know you both and hearing about your research and your achievements. Is there anything that we can conclude with that we haven't mentioned?
Some of our audience is interested in... they can look up on our website and the geoscience department, as well as our Facebook pages and social media channels, and get in contact with us. And there's a lot more to discover, I guess, right,
yeah,
Daniela?
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's fun.
Fantastic. So all they have to do is type in geosciences department,
University of Malta on Google, and it should come up
list,
immediately.
Yeah.
And all our contacts are there eventually to get in touch. And,
brilliant.
You know, would love to eventually get some feedback as well.
We try to stay in touch a lot with people, even on our Facebook page. We have a good following base as well. I mean, an amount of people follow us. So whoever has any questions, they can contact us. Yes, and we'll be happy to answer.
That's been great. Thank you very much for joining me on this program, in Ricerca all'Università, here on Campus FM. I'm Colin Fitz, Dr. Sebastiano D'Amico, and Dr. Daniela Farrugia.
Thank you.